Welcome to La Liga Weekly. It's a bit different this week with no La Liga action, but we've still been talking to our friends over at Patreon. We're just trying to scratch a living, everyone. Over there, we decided exactly how much blame to apportion to Real Madrid and how much to Gareth Bale. And we debated the future of goalkeeping with Terry Gibson arguing that they should primarily be good at goalkeeping. How very old-fashioned. Then we took Darren's question about Mariano Diaz, and that got us into sorting out Real Madrid and Barcelona's transfer business, past and future. It's about 20 minutes long. If you want the rest, it's at patreon.com/LTEL, and we'll see you with a normal pod next week. Hello, Patreons. Welcome along. Now, sometimes I start off with a very sort of mild jibe at Terry Gibson, but recent events have scared me off. I'm afraid he might punch me like Will Smith or issue a strongly worded tweet like Gareth Bale. So here we are. So thank you for your questions. We're doing a quick Q&A podcast. We do these sometimes. So welcome to Michael. Welcome to Callum. Good to have you along. It's nice to have you all there. Tell your friends, bring your friends. And then we will, obviously, we're back with the regular La Liga at the weekend. But let's have a chat now. So we've got the international briefly to do. We'll get to your questions. Terry's, it's also the for a bonus, this is the Dutch football podcast as well. although don't say Holland, whatever you do, Terry. That would be a terrible, terrible mistake if you did that. How were the Hollanders?
I was tied up in knots with Dutch, Netherlands and Holland. I wasn't sure what to call everybody. It was interesting seeing Memphis and Frankie de Jong playing. The Dutch could be a real contender based on what I saw against a more than decent Denmark team that did well in the Euros. But they were the way the Dutch play, the tactics, the quality of players they've got. They've got some confidence. I think it's 8 unbeaten now under Van Gaal, 6 wins, 2 draws, and they look really good. It's always pleasing for someone of my age. I don't know if this applies to people younger, but growing up with Cruyff and the Rudy Krol team and stuff like that, it left a real imprint in your life about how good football could play. The Ajax team that won, you know, Champions Leagues. I'm not talking about the team in the 90s. That was another one. So it's always pleasing for someone of my age to see a classic Dutch team appear again. And, of course, they've had other successes throughout the years. The team with Van Basten and Rijkaard and Hulleting was something to remember. And I actually think they haven't got a Van Basten, Hulleting, Rijkaard in this group, but they're not far off it. But as a team, they were great to commentate on. It was good going football. We had the Christian Eriksen story as well. Actually, I've got goosebumps on my arm because we spent the half-time watching him warm up, getting ready to come on. He was getting hugs and slaps from everyone. And he actually didn't want it. You could see he was thinking, just leave me alone. I just want to be a footballer again. I want to put this story behind me. And then he comes on and within seconds, we thought it was his first touch. It was his third touch. But it was literally a minute after appearing as a sub at half-time. And not only was it a goal, it was a great goal as well. Yeah. And as the ball's being cut back to him, you're thinking, that's not Eriksen, is it? Surely not. And then he wraps his foot around it in the top corner. You think, yeah, my goodness, it is. What a story. And so Denmark are good as well, as we know. Yeah,
good teams.
But the Dutch, I think, could be, not predicting they could win it, but with a bit of momentum, a bit of confidence and the style that they're playing, they're going to be good to watch. De Ligt was off the scalp. I was so impressed with him. The way they play with the three centre-backs, he's on the right side of the three. Van Dijk's in the middle, Nathan Ake on the left. And Ake and De Ligt sometimes are overlapping as wingers. Everybody pushes in. They've got numerical superiority in the attacking third of the pitch. Wing-backs tuck in. It was, I thought, a classic Dutch team. And one I'm looking forward to seeing more of now.
It's interesting, isn't it? We won't spend too long on this, Patreons, but because Van Gaal is old, isn't he? You know, by any measure.
70 now.
Yeah. So he keeps up to date, doesn't he, to be fair? Because, you know, all they look like a Nagelsmann team or something, don't they? You know, with everybody pressed really high, really taking a gamble on it. So he's renewed himself as a coach, isn't it? Which is interesting to see. Because, you know, when he was at Man United and stuff, people said, oh, he's too old, he's past it, it's old-fashioned methods and all of that. Because he was the coach in the 90s, wasn't he, of that Ajax team that you know, the second great Ajax team, maybe. So he's done all right, hasn't he? Some of these old guys keeping up, aren't they?
Oh yeah, I haven't seen so much of the Dutch in the qualification process. I know that he took over from De Boer after the Euros, and seeing him this time it was a pleasant surprise, to be honest. Not just because they've got good players, because they have, but it was the style of play. I'm thinking, I'm enjoying this. I like what I'm seeing here. The Jong and Koop Miners in midfield are very similar players. So that you've got two. For those of us that know Frankie, the young Koop Manners is a similar player, and he's good on the ball. He's twisting and turning and getting out of trouble. And Steven Bergwijn, who's played outstanding alongside Memphis. So it was a really good watch. For those that, just like watching good teams, I think the Dutch will be a good watch in the World Cup in November.
I did Moldova against Kazakhstan, which they won't be at the World Cup. Actually, you know what? It was a really good game. It was actually excellent. Kazakhstan came behind to win. And the Nations League is good. Certainly, I can see why at the top end people are thinking, do we have to have another one? Because there's the World Cup and the Euros and everything else. Quite often, just for scheduling reasons, Sky will commentate on Kazakhstan or something because they're earlier in the day, aren't they? So basically it doesn't clash. All the Western European teams obviously playing at the same time. So they'll put one of the, it's quite a long way east, Kazakhstan. But their qualifying games are pointless. They're just boring. Except, every 3 years. Well, they beat Scotland 3 years ago and that was it. And then nothing, they just don't win any games. But when teams of a similar stature play each other, it's good. It's actually an enjoyable game. And they're all right. They're not Spain, Netherlands level, but, they can play. Yet in the qualifying process, they're just doomed to being, nine men behind the ball or 10 men behind the ball, and just trying to stop a team playing, which brings us to Spain, of course, isn't it? Because a 2-1 win over Albania, 177 shots, of which two were on target. And then they concede a calamitous goal. So they very nearly ended up 2-1. They won it again with a lovely goal by Danny Olmo. It's not the first time he's got them out of jail with a lovely finish at the end of a game, is it? It's a similar story with Spain, isn't it? They could win the World Cup, couldn't they? But they could easily get done in the groups by awkward teams who don't let them play.
Exactly. And drawing two out of the three and something and missing out, something like that. But they could, as we saw, they struggled in the Euros, didn't they, to get through the group. And then from then on, and that's what the beauty of the tournament, when we come to the tournaments, it's about a team that gets momentum, it gets confidence. Incredible story that Italy are not their own European champions and not qualifying for the World Cup. It's a shame. I talked about, we're always pleasing to see a classic Dutch team in it. When Italy are in the World Cup as well, it's two on the trot that they missed out on now. It's a fixture normally you want to watch. You come to the world's best players and you get the world's best teams, and Italy should be in there, but they're not. It is refreshing to, as you mentioned, I think the good thing about the Nations League as well, they play teams of their own standard.
Yeah.
So that's what, therefore, they can have a go and try and win games as opposed to just avoiding defeat, which, in fairness, Albania tried to do against Spain, but that's going to be the problem with the Spanish. That they are, Ferran Torres does score a goal, Dani Olmo does score a goal. They've got great attacking players in midfield. They have the potential to be World Cup winners because of the quality they have. I kind of trust Luis Enrique because of his record.
Yeah.
I kind of trust.
Sometimes you think, David Ryan? Are you sure?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
The team selection, squad selection is going to be key.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's very forthright and adamant that he wants to do it his way. I think I've been clear to you, I'm not sure on the podcast, but I think De Gea is the best goalkeeper Spain have, but something's not right there between him and Luis Enrique, obviously.
He doesn't like him as a ball player, does he? I think that's it, isn't it? Similar with Southgate. Well, to be fair, Southgate, Jordan Pickford, I don't think he's ever had a bad game for England, to be fair, has he?
No.
So you keep him in. I think Luis Enrique, it's about how good a footballer you are, I think, isn't it? I think we're almost seeing the future of goalkeeper. And I've said this for a few years now. Goalkeepers are going to have to get better and better and better as ball players, as more and more, as that style of football that started with Paco Gemez and Pep and has gone to the top level, as that comes back down through, goalkeepers are going to have to get better at football, aren't they? Because David Raya was a futsal player. He's not the biggest goalkeeper. He's not the best goalkeeper. I think the only explanation. I mean, it was an awful bit of goalkeeping. But he's there because
I'm just
football.
Laughing.
Yeah,
I'm laughing at the basic fundamentals of a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Mike, is you basically saying I could have played in goal? No, I couldn't have played in goal. I could have been pretty decent with the ball at my feet, and I was quick. But I was 5'4" and small, and I was going to get chipped every 5 minutes. And people going to, you know, when a cross comes in, I've got no chance. The basic fundamentals have to lean towards being the goalkeeper. And I actually don't think De Gea is any better or any worse than any other.
Yeah.
Let's take Unai Simón. I don't think Unai Simón is particularly good with the ball at his feet. Far from it.
Yeah.
I actually don't think he's as good a goalkeeper as David De Gea.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any difference. If I was thinking about a goalkeeper who makes less mistakes with the ball at his feet, I'd probably go with De Gea.
Right, okay. Yeah. But
so if there was a Ter Stegen there,
yeah,
the Spain group, excuse me, I could understand if Luis Enrique went for that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't see any of them being Stegen, you know, Neuer, Alisson, Edison. I don't see any of them being that level.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. So I haven't seen Robert
so
Sanchez.
Then I think go for the best goalkeeper.
Yeah, I haven't seen, because I've seen Brighton a fair amount. Robert Sanchez, it never occurred to me watching it. When you watch Ter Stegen, you think, oh, he's good with his feet, isn't he? Straight away. And yes, when you see, yes, as you say, Edison, when you see Edison hitting those 75-yard raking passes and it lands on the bloke's foot, you think, oh, right, I can, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, that gives you another weapon, doesn't it? But you're right, I've never, oddly enough, considering the Spanish production system, don't seem to be producing goalkeepers particularly who are good at football. I guess that's why that's the reason for David Raya being there, isn't it? But
Luis Enrique said it was a personal choice, which I don't get, because they're all personal choices.
Well, that's basically
the manager of Spain.
No, that is basically project. stop asking me. That's literally that, isn't it? Mind your own business. That's literally that, isn't it?
So it's just where you get the balance right between the goalkeeper and the it's great if you've got a great goalkeeper who's good with the ball at his feet. But I think first and foremost, you need the goalkeeping attributes have to be there. It's no good having a goalkeeper who's really good with the ball at his feet, but not very good at the rest of the stuff that comes with goalkeeping.
But David Silver in goal. Yeah,
exactly. But you're right about that. It's interesting. There are a number of good Spanish goalkeepers. But none of them stand out as being a clear example of one that's really good with the ball at his feet. And there are a number of those about in European football. But you're right, the Spanish haven't been able to come up with one of those goalkeepers yet. So therefore, I don't think the difference is between a lot of them deserve to be chosen purely because he's clearly what we're going with, because he's two-footed, he can do this, he can do that.
So therefore,
you have to fall back on the fundamentals of best keeper. Think De Gea is particularly bad with the ball at his feet.
So, but it's almost as if Luis Enrique, I'm trying to sort of get in Luis Enrique's mind, that I've got such a finely tuned machine here that if I take one element wrong, which is the goalkeeper can't play the kind of passes I want him to play, the whole thing's going to go like that. Do you think that's overdoing that? Is that too? Bear in mind, it's international football. You only get a few days work with these fellas. Most teams in international football are playing fairly conservative kind of football, I would say, certainly compared to the big club teams, to the really good club teams. I think that's it, isn't it? That he thinks his model needs that kind of goalkeeper in, so he's searching for that kind of goalkeeper.
Yeah. I mean, say Jan Oblak was Spanish, would Luis Enrique pick him?
It's a good question, yeah. I mean, on current form, obviously, no. But I know you mean in the last three or four years.
Probably still.
Yeah. Because Atleti haven't played that way. So does Luis Enrique watch Atleti thinking, oh, if only that Oblak was replaced by David Raya, they'd be winning stuff.
Yeah. It's worth the debate.
Yeah.
But Oblak's been nothing but one of the best goalkeepers in the world. And yet, when he is called upon to, he's basic, isn't it?
He just kicks
the ball
away.
Long into an area.
Well, Courtois,
he can pass it short.
Yeah,
Courtois is another one. Mm. He's got better.
Yeah,
but it's not something you look at and think.
Yeah,
if only Oblak could hit an outside of the foot curler, 45 yard pass then he'd be a good goalkeeper. No, great goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Dodgy period this season, but I trust him.
So we haven't got to the point where goalkeepers are coming through as kids as should be playing in the midfield for half of their youth developments, because that's where I think you're going with this Luis Enrique situation. And he's not the only one. I think Pep's there and others are there as well. That were
Pep was the first to make that big choice, wasn't he?
When
he got moved on Joe Hart.
Yeah.
It was the first time it became an issue, but everyone was, oh no, Joe Hart's a good goalkeeper. He is and has been. But it was a big choice to make, and Pep was bold enough to take out one of the popular local players at City and replace him with someone that he thought was because he could do that job better. So I get it. I get why they do it, but it has to be a significant difference between the player that's being brought in and the player that's being replaced. Not just, I can't see the difference between the Spain goalkeepers on who's the best with the ball at his feet. So therefore, then I would revert back to he's the best goalkeeper. I trust us if we're under pressure, he's going to come for crosses, he's going to make super saves. That would be, you know, the obvious choice to make then.
Okay.
But Spain, this game will be like the ones they get in the group. You see the draw on Friday. And it's going to be an issue. Ferran Torres is key. He does appear to be the main striker there. And he's getting goals. Dani Olmo, Sarabia, they all play well for Spain. But when the squad's announced, you always look at it and think, there's people missing from this. Yet they continue, those players that Luis Enrique picks continue to do a good job for him.
So they're
going to be contenders. And that's the World Cup, when we come around to it, we will pick our favourites based on previous winners and historic winners and the big nations. But it's, you know, if you get that momentum going and you get confidence and a bit of fortune goes your way, then we've seen in other tournaments, when we forget that, every time a new tournament comes around, we forget there's going to be a dark horse, outsiders that get that spirit, mentality.
Seven games.
The Danes, what happened to them?
Yeah, well they were good. To be fair, in my defence, I commentated on the Danes and I was saying they actually are good and they're experienced and they're a good set of players. There's not massive depth there. They couldn't name you two good, great squads, but that one squad is pretty good that they've got.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And the trouble they had in the first game against Finland and Christian Eriksen, and then they struggled to qualify. Then by the time they play England in the semi-final, you're thinking, actually, and they were unlucky on the night.
And you're looking
at them thinking, yeah, this is a big game. So you just need that momentum to build. You have to have a certain amount of quality, of course. You're not going to get rank outsiders that come through and get a bit of confidence. They're not going to be. If you've got the right amount of quality and the right confidence and coach, and belief and spirit and the settled team and stuff like that, you can go on and win a tournament.
I mean, Italy shows you that, doesn't it? There is a huge amount of good timing, good luck involved in winning a tournament. It's seven games, after all. It's between three and seven games. You know, it's that short a period of time, isn't it? The fact that they win the tournament, didn't qualify for the one either side of it. And yet we try to draw these huge conclusions, reorganise your whole football on the basis, oh, we better do it like the Italians do it after the Euros. To be fair, no one said that, thankfully. But, you know, that's where you could have gone, isn't it? And yet, you know, a year later, they're not even at the tournament. And anyway, shall we crack on with our questions?
Yes.
Let's start with Ryan's, and it sort of does take us back into the international realm a bit, and the Wales game. What do you make of the latest Bale marker bust-up? It seems to me both sides have some degree of blame, with Bale showing disrespect to Real Madrid, golf, flag antics, etc. However, Spanish press don't seem to give him much breathing space, given that the last two managers, Zidane and Ancelotti, have given him zero proper opportunities. The man was a key part of four Champions League in 5 years in the squad. After all, I think that's a reasonable summary of it, Ryan. So, I mean, I think fault on all... I think it's three sides involved, if I'm dishing out faults. Bale.
Yep.
The media in Spain and the managers. All of whom... I mean, the media, in a sense... probably deal with that quicker. It happens. It's a shame it happens, but sort of what they're like, the papers, isn't it? It sells papers. The ones who could have done something about it more obviously, Bale and Real Madrid. Is that You tell me.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. It does hurt me, the media in Spain, because it is very pro-Real Madrid, and they're very close to Real Madrid. I mean, it's to an extent, I'm sure I've said this in a previous podcast, back in 2014 when Atletico Madrid won the league, they weren't on the front page.
It was
Real Madrid had beaten, I don't know, I can't remember, it was Getafe or something, 3-0. And it was the front page story. And
I'm thinking,
scratching my head thinking, Atletico Madrid won the title in Barcelona. And it turned the page over and there it was. So it's very, there's obviously a relationship between Marca wanting to please Real Madrid. So you do feel at times they're doing they're doing work on behalf of Real Madrid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not journalism.
There's a partnership there. It's not a journalist doing a story. Yeah. I don't get it. I must admit, I don't get it. It's not only Gareth Bale that's gone through it. There's other players that have gone through it. At the moment, I would say Hazard's on the verge. He's getting the same treatment as Gareth Bale. Doesn't serve any purpose. I agree with Ryan on there is blame to be attacked. I find this whole thing really interesting now. I know what the outcome's going to be. He's going to leave Real Madrid. But my opinion of Gareth Bale hasn't changed. A sensational footballer that has been underused by Real Madrid.
Yeah.
I understand the issue regarding the injuries and that has caused him problems regarding lack of playing time. He is injury prone, apart from when he plays for Wales. But it just seems a mystery to me is why wouldn't you use him? Why wouldn't you play him? The Clasico is a recent example. Allegedly, he wasn't in the squad. Allegedly, we believed that he might be the player to play up front. He played a month or 6 weeks ago against Villarreal and did okay the 70 minutes he was on. Disappeared again. And we never really get to the bottom of, yes, he's injured. If he was injured for the Clasico, how comes he was training and immediately with Wales and then running around like a 22-year-old in their win and two unbelievable goals. I mean, and the free kick took the attention, but the other goal was a great goal as well.
And
it just seems such a waste from financially for Real Madrid. And I struggled to see. I think there are a lot of similarities between Zidane and Ancelotti anyway. I've always thought that.
Yeah.
I mean, Zidane was Ancelotti's assistant. He's obviously got his own ideas about football, but he's learned a lot from Ancelotti. Personality-wise, they're very similar, very quiet, unassuming. They don't suffer fools. And they've both chosen to use Gareth Bale in the way that they have. And it just seems a shame. And you're going to see him leave Real Madrid. He's going to have to find a new club because there was doubts to whether he'd continue playing because he's a wealthy boy, doesn't need to play football. But with the World Cup now, if Wales do qualify, then he's going to have to be playing for another club. So it's going to be interesting to see where he ends up.
Cardiff City,
Well, it'd be interesting to see what part the finances play in it, whether he will just go and play for someone on a regular basis, pick and choose when he plays, which is daft. He's 32. He's not...
This is the unknown for me in the whole thing is how much Gareth Bale.
He's the same age as Aubameyang.
Yeah, yeah.
Looking at Aubameyang now and going, oh, is he going to continue? Has he got another year left in him? I don't know. Gareth Bale, when he plays, looks like he's got 3-4 years left.
What we don't know is how much Gareth Bale's wage demands have played a part in his choices in recent years. He should have been gone from Real Madrid. It's been obvious he hasn't been central to Real Madrid for years now.
Yeah.
He's wasted his career.
Yeah.
Or they've wasted his career. So he had the spell at Spurs, and he was okay at Spurs, a bit injury prone, but he did okay, didn't he? And so he should.
He 16 should have been, goals he got.
Yeah, yeah, in all competitions.
The blink of an eye.
Yeah. And he should have been.
He was coming on this scoring goal.
He should have been somewhere this
football
season.
Looked so easy.
Yeah, he should have been at Spurs or some similar team this season. And so what we don't know is someone somewhere in this is being ridiculously stubborn. You're going to guess both sides, I guess, aren't you? That Real Madrid won't let him go to go and play for someone for like 100 grand a week and they pay the rest of it. I'm guessing something like that would happen, would seem to be where you'd go with it. To the point where Real Madrid, have got away with it, haven't they, in some respect? Because Barca were such a financial basket case under Bartomeu. They threw so much money away. Bang, you know, just chucking, burning money outside the camp now.
Yeah.
So Real Madrid have got away with Jovic.
Darren brings that question up, doesn't he?
Oh, does he?
Comparing Barcelona.
But, Darren's article about Bale was
disgraceful, wasn't it?
Let me read. Have we done?
Disgraceful article. I must be honest.
Yeah.
Far too personal.
Yeah. There is a limit. When I say it happens, it doesn't have to happen, and it doesn't have to be that horrible and personal, does it? So, yeah, it is unacceptable. And you are responsible for what you write. Journalism does need to get better. It's got better. I think it's not as bad as it was in the Kelvin McKenzie days where they were, just being horrible about people. So it's got, I'm not saying it hasn't got better, but,
I've got some great headlines in my box in the garage. I do laugh them, what I was called.
Yeah,
right. Be allowed to be called now. Yeah. I was, and some of them I was like, because I was small, one of them I was called Pint Sized Midget Dwarf. Terry Gibson scored the winning goal. You might get away with Pint Sized Midget Dwarf. I don't know whether you throw that in. I don't know whether.
I don't think you can. I don't think we call people that.
Has changed.
Let's do Darren's question. So, it's a good shout. So, lads, I was fascinated by Terry's comments on Mariano Diaz on the last pod about the comfort zone of a Real Madrid squad player. Who do you think is more to blame, the player or the club? His transfer to Madrid I found confusing. Taking a reported 15 million euro loss between selling him to Leon, buying him back, presumably on higher wages than his first stint. For all of Barca's financial mismanagement in the latter Bartomeu years, do you think this has masked how much Madrid have squandered in that time? Hazard, Jovic, Diaz, refusing to let Bale go to China and lose his wages. Yeah, so there's a second part, so we'll get to Barca later. But yeah, that's basically exactly, Darren, is exactly the point I'm sort of making. But yeah, go on.
And there are other players there as well. I mean, Dani Ceballos.
Yeah.
Odriozola. I think he's gone on loan to Italy. Dani Ceballos, when he joined from Betis to Real Madrid, it's a super signing.
Yeah.
He was an outstanding player for Betis. And he's gone there. We don't see him anymore now. And he obviously had to spell at Arsenal. You could almost accuse them of being wasteful by letting Odegaard go. So there are a number of players at Real Madrid that, because of the previous two managers who were really strict in adhering to a smaller group of players, that some of these fine footballers just don't play football. And I do wonder, I don't think they're going to have, Mbappe is not going to be an issue. But there will be other players, I'm sure, will look around and think, really, if I go there and I could end up like, Jovic. Everyone in Europe wanted Jovic. Real Madrid got him. Never played him. Like Dani Ceballos and Odriozola, you go there and you think, will I play? If I don't play, am I going to spend 3-4 years on good money? They might be looking to get me out on loan. I never play.
So if you're with an agency working with so a talented young player, Koop Meyers, say Real Madrid are interested. Yep. Right. So you sort of want to go, Real Madrid, I'll go there.
Of course.
Yeah. But the danger that you get there and they give Modric a 7-year contract and and you never see the light of day. Could you write into your contract that basically if I don't play 10 games, I'm allowed to leave for the fee that I came for? Is that a way forward? Would you do that?
Doable, yes. I think it's feasible. But then you've still got someone else who's got to pay the same wages that you're earning.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? You're getting a wage trap. Yeah.
It's still an issue then that you might be able to leave at the same price they paid for you, but someone else might not pay the same wages. It's hard to say no, and it's hard to leave when you're playing like Mariano Diaz. I don't have any sympathy for Mariano Diaz because I know I've spoken to clubs in England that were interested. I've asked me my opinion and I've asked what the situation was after it. I told them my opinion. So my opinion is he's a really good striker. I like him. He's energetic, enthusiastic, technically he's good. He's got an eye for goal. Is he Real Madrid? No. but he still believes he is that level. And I know he's turned clubs down in the Premier League because he will only go to, he didn't name the clubs, Liverpool, Man City, Man United, Chelsea. It's the four teams we expect to be in the Champions League. That criteria then rules him out of really good clubs in England in the Premier League that would have liked to have bought him at the right price.
So what level
he could have been an asset.
Was it your Europa League level clubs trying to buy him?
And he had no interest, completely out of hand, dismissed it immediately. He would only go to one of those four clubs. My opinion, he weren't going to make them any better. He weren't going to get into City, United, if you could argue about, but Liverpool, you know, Chelsea. For him, it was Champions League teams in the Premier League, or he's going to stand
sometimes
around
the players need an agent who's going to tell them the truth, isn't it? I think that's a problem, isn't it? Sometimes you need to sit down and say, mate, you're not a kid.
Yeah.
And you're not, you know, the Chelsea are going to pay 100 million for Lukaku, so they're not going to buy you as well, you know.
Yeah. And you're not going to get in at Liverpool.
Yeah. You're not better than Mohamed Salah, are you? So, you know, sign for West Ham, Leicester, Villa.
Exactly. Yeah. Those type of clubs. Yeah. And he would have played and probably earn the same money.
Yeah.
They could match what he's earning at Real Madrid.
Yeah. Going that way, you can, can't you? Yeah. Yeah. I know Martial hasn't been brilliant at Sevilla. I admire him for going, though, because he could have just sat raking in his money at Man United, couldn't he? He's probably, I know, you know, United are probably still paying some of his way. I know that happens in the short term. In the long term, the player has got to accept, Gareth Bale has got to accept that, you know, he could have moved and been paid 200 grand a week. And had two years of his football career. And he's chosen not to do that, I would say. So it's not all that. I agree, Real Madrid are ridiculous in that they've got away with it in not recovering players, as you put it, like Hazard. He's going to have an operation, isn't he, Hazard, coming up. You've got to put him in the team. You've got to put him. He's Eden Hazard.
Yes.
He's been one of the best players in the world until a couple of years ago, for the previous 5 years, with the odd dip in form. Ridiculous not to be getting...
International competitions as well.
You look at
World Cups and European Championships. Yeah. He's been one of those standout players. He had Real Madrid written all over him.
I think there is a natural failure rate. And I might put Odegaard in that it's not a disaster. He didn't stay too long, I think. He didn't sit in the reserves for season after season. Yep. He tried, he went to play for Real Sociedad. We all thought he played really nicely there. He had a couple of goes at Real Madrid, didn't he? And he couldn't quite establish himself and went to play at Arsenal. And he's doing really well at Arsenal, playing really well. I admire him for that. He's accepted that he's not a Real Madrid player. He's an Arsenal player.
Also with that, though, they didn't pay an absolute fortune for him.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have been on the ridiculous wages.
Yeah.
So other clubs can match. They can match the fee and they can match the salary. And there is a way out for a player that wants to just not do what Mariano Diaz is doing.
Yeah.
So Odegaard wants to play. So that's to be admired.
Yeah.
Be realistic and go, if you don't fancy me, I'll go. I'll go to Real Sociedad. I'll go to Arsenal. And then I'll sign for Arsenal. Yeah. I'm not going to hang around in the hope that maybe one day when Casemiro, Modric and Kroos retire, I'm the next in line, because that probably isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
So I admire it. I admire Odegaard doing what he's done, other than the fact he's gone to Arsenal.
And he's made them better, hasn't he? Although, to be fair, separate debate. Emile Smith-Rowe is a really good player and he's not playing regularly now because Odegaard plays in a very similar position. Different kinds of player, but there's a very good English youngster not playing, not starting games now because of Odegaard. So anyway, that's a different debate for a different day, I think. Shall we do part two,
Darren? I agree with Darren's part, though, about Barcelona.
Yeah.
The focal point of everyone wasting money, yet Real Madrid at the same time have done similar with a number of players.
Yeah. And they're going to win the league. I do think... and it's not been the last couple of years. This was all signings from a few years ago, wasn't it? But I do think that's part of them. You look at Real Madrid; they might get their way through the Champions League. Ultimately, I don't think they're as strong at the moment as Man City, Liverpool, Chelsea. And I think that they've wasted money, and I think that's a factor. I think this is not nothing, is it? We blithely talk about Gareth Bale's wages and stuff, It's a fortune, isn't it? You give that much money to or any other club in La Liga, you give that much money to Sevilla, they could have rejigged the whole squad and come back as Champions League contenders, couldn't they? With the amount of money that Barcelona that Barcelona and Real Madrid have just thrown away. Like having a
I think we have to bear in mind as well, is Bell didn't force them to pay him that.
No, true.
And when when the new contract was extended, everybody probably thought, I can't remember when exactly it was, everybody probably thought there was an obvious decision to make. You know, they spent a fortune on him. He'd played well. He'd won trophies. So if he's going to get, obviously he's going to get a rise.
Yeah.
There was no big hoo-ha about, well, Gareth Bale has signed a new deal. It's going to cost Real Madrid this much money. And everyone was against the idea. It's just the relationship has deteriorated from both parties since he signed that contract.
So you had imagine a sort of sliding scale as to whose fault it is. Where if the middle of my pen is right in the middle, are you going Bale's fault more? Or are you going Real Madrid's fault more?
Real Madrid's fault more.
So over here somewhere.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that. Yeah. Yes. Right. Let's do part two of Darren's question. Move on to Barcelona. It looks like another major summer of hard work ahead for Alemany and co. I never know how to say this. People call him Kessi, but he's got an accent over the E. So if anyone can help, tell me. Kessi, Kessier. We need to know. Looks a bit of shrewd business, if that turns out to be true. But how do you think they should stop chasing Haaland and instead prioritise strengthening the defence with long-term investments such as Koundé, rather than trying to patch things up with potential free transfers such as Christensen and Athapili Koueta? It's a good question, isn't it? I mean, there's various bits to unpick in there. I think that's the kind of transfer business that Barca just didn't do in the years of Bartomeu. 2015, magnificent. We also played some of the best football ever. Obviously, the Pep era. If they built on that with sensible signings, they'd still be favourites for the Champions League, wouldn't they? They'd still be going into the Champions League. Us thinking, oh, well, it's everyone trying to catch Barcelona. They threw it away with financial and transfer mismanagement. Because they didn't do stuff like this. They didn't do stuff like, oh, hang on, he's a really highly... I don't know enough about him, but he looks... people love him. People say he's brilliant. Solid midfield, getting him for free. Not massive wages, apparently. It's an obvious why thing not? To do. Yeah, yeah. Why
exactly.
not?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been some great players over the years that have been that level, that have really enhanced Barcelona. Mm. Mixing him in with the other players that they've got. Seydou Keita, for instance. What a signing that was... in terms of the amount of games he played every year, the amount of positions he played in every year, the amount of times he filled in for other key players and yet always seemed to be playing without being, oh, he hasn't played for a month, he hasn't played for 6 weeks. He's just, Adriano was another one that the Barcelona bought and played left back, right back, different positions and was never the first choice, but always there.
You need players. It's a squad, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. So regarding Barcelona's policy this year, I think first and foremost, they've got to move players on because they've accumulated lots of players again. And then I think first and foremost, Xavi has to decide, along with Jordi Cruyff and Alemany, what they need and be specific. Otherwise, they end up with another massive group of players and players that are not playing again. So they need to get everything out of every new player they bring into the club. And they need to move on those that are not playing at the moment and haven't played. So the likes of Clement Longley, that's an interesting one. The left-sided centre-back, I wouldn't imagine they're going to get a massive fee for him. Does he do the job that, could he do the job that Xavi wants from a defence in terms of Pico's getting older now, significantly older, still doing a good job, but he's going to need to be replaced long-term. Araujo, you might argue, Eric Garcia, younger, of course. So I think they need to be specific on what we need for the future. The Haaland and Mbappe one's interesting because you kind of feel we're wrong to feel this. There are no guarantees when it comes to a transfer of a player. There is literally no guarantee that tells you that Mbappe is going to sign for Real Madrid. Haaland, this guy goes to Barcelona. And Haaland is going to get 40 goals next year and Mbappe is going to get 40 goals next year. There isn't that guarantee. We both know, we all know, they're two footballers. But there is no guarantee and you're looking at it and you're thinking, they're both young. Everyone that wants to sign them thinks they are signing a guarantee that for 10 years they're going to get 400 or 500 goals. It doesn't work like that. We don't know whether Mbappe or Haaland, whichever club they go to, might have worked.
Everyone's an injury. And you're stuck. Everyone's an injury away from, especially, well, they're both, because they're so, they're both lightning fast. You do a Michael Owen, and it's Michael Owen version one to Michael Owen version two. Well, like two totally different footballers, weren't they?
Exactly.
The guy who no one could catch because he was so fast in his first few seasons. So the guy at Stoke and Man United, who was just like just awful player. And
Fernando Torres.
Yeah, yeah. Another after the knee injury. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it's weird. It's not weird. I understand it, but I think there has to be still a sense of realism about we can't pay someone £1 million a week.
Yeah.
Because we don't know the personalities of these players. I assume they both look to be great professionals. But what if one of them was to turn around and go, that's me done.
Yeah.
Gonna put a couple of kilos on every now and then. And
yeah,
I've got a 5-year contract. I'm earning.
We've literally just been talking about Gareth Bale. Might be Erling Haaland playing golf every week.
So are Barcelona in that position to take that gamble? Clearly not.
Mm.
And do they need Haaland? We'd love to have Haaland, that guarantee of 30, 40, 50 goals a year for 10 years. But at the moment, it's not a position. They've just signed Aubameyang.
Yeah.
They've got other strikers, attacking players. They've got an abundance of attacking players now. Some of them are going to have to be moved on. You can't keep them all. And the same goes along with what are you looking at? What type of midfield player are you looking for? Because you've now got Pedri, Gavi and Nico on top of De Jong, on top of Busquets. Sergio Roberto is still at the club. So what type of midfield player do you know? Be specific. If it's Kessié, go and get him. Sign him on the free transfer. You don't want to sign Kessié and then he's one of 25 and you never see him. That's still, Barcelona can't waste money.
Yeah.
They can't waste any of that salary budget. Nothing. Yeah. Every player has to be worth what they're paying him. You know, players like Umtiti will probably have to be moved on. Another player that we tend to forget is injured at the moment.
Yeah.
So I think Barcelona's have made huge strides in recent months. Scattergun approach to a degree. But they knew they needed a department fixed. The attacking department needed fixing. And they went with it. And it's paying off. But now they need to just slow down and be more specific. And it's important to move players on as well. I think there's a few players there that we didn't think would still be there. And they're still... You know, I don't know what's going to happen with Coutinho. I believe the Griezmann deal is done, that there isn't going to be a return, but he is officially on loan. Coutinho is on loan. So there's a lot of work to be done by Barcelona.
It now, reminds me...
Hell of a lot of work.
Of the... I've said this the other day, but I think it's worth repeating. The jigsaw that the clubs with no money go through every summer. Yes. Where I think it's Alaves, who are like 14 players out of contract or something, and it's not that unusual. I mean, it's, you know, a few of those will renew.
Yep.
But and part of that is waiting, because Dembele might be the crucial one for Barca, isn't it? Because it's a lot of money. Are they? Is he part of their budget or is he not part of their budget? And then if his huge salary is in, then they've got to be very careful. If his huge salary goes out and Sergio Roberto goes, and as you say, they managed to get Umtiti. Suddenly, and Coutinho, I think, will go, won't it? Suddenly, there's a lot of money appears then, and there's a lot more leeway. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I love Erling Haaland. I see the case for signing him because he is one of two world stars at the moment who could bring in a lot of revenue, bring a lot of the kudos that Barcelona would benefit from, fans all around the world and all of that. Football-wise, don't particularly need him. The other team that I don't think needs Haaland is Man City. And I don't think he's a Man City player. Yeah. I think his main thing is his physicality. He is so big and fast and strong and quite good. But Man City strikers don't play like that. They're not hitting people on the counter-attack. He's awesome on the counter-attack. You'd hate to play against him on the counter. You know, we were talking earlier about the Dutch high line. You'd be terrified of playing that against Haaland, wouldn't you? Because...
Yeah.
You know, anything over the top, you're not catching him. But I don't see where it doesn't necessarily mean he fits in at the very top teams or the teams that want to play like top teams.
Exactly. So, I mean, he's going to be a good sign. Good sign. It's going to cost an absolute fortune for anybody. He's clearly going to be moving on in the summer. He's a player that scores goals. It's just playing teams have to balance what they need rather than,
yeah,
he's available, we've got to get him. Oh, what are we going to do with Ferran Torres that we just spent 50 million on? What are we going to do with Aubameyang we just signed on a deal? Traore, are they going to keep Traore?
Rumours not, apparently. I was reading Football España earlier and, you know, well, again, that's a classic one. He started so well, but then Dembele came back in and was sensational, or has been sensational. Is there room for both of those? Or if they're basically, if they renew Dembele, is Adama, has he got to go?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. And he got Trincao, who's only alone.
Yeah, yeah. And he hasn't played enough for Wolves, has he, for them to pay 30 million for him. So, yeah.
No. Yeah. So they need to be much just specific, not waste any of the salary budget at all.
Yeah.
I'd love to see Haaland and Mbappe in La Liga. I'm sure Mbappe is going to be at Real Madrid. It's going to be interesting to see where Haaland goes. But it's just a sense of caution that, as you said, you know, players are a hamstring away, or, you know, I didn't think Eden Hazard's transfer was going to work out like this at Real Madrid. And that allowed for time to adjust to a new club, new league. But I didn't think that all these years later, we'd still talking about Hazard that barely plays, barely scores a goal, and does anything for Real Madrid. So it's just a tale of caution, really. But Barca needs to be specific to exactly what they need, not just fiddle up a squad with bloated salaries and players not playing. Oh, we've got to give him a game this week because he can play for 3 weeks. And who am I going to leave out? It needs to be, they need to be really specific and not spend fortunes on players that, you know, coming into the squad. They need to, you know, really be careful.
Yeah, that jigsaw, all right. Yeah. It's a...
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. So let's move on to Richard's question. I think you've sort of answered it. Griezmann, where will he play his football next season? You think it's the deal is written that he's off to... That many can't just chuck him back and ruin the jigsaw, can they?
No. I think they went all out to get him. And I think it's, by and large, it's working. He's got better. It took him a while to settle. He's got better to the extent now. I think he's a key player. And I think there was always a desire, and I think it was a financial plan that they could pay at a certain time as opposed to when Barca wanted to move Griezmann on. So I'd be amazed if that doesn't turn permanent. And everything you hear suggests that it will do. There's no speculation that he's going to be returning back to Barcelona. So I think it's he stays at Atletico next season.
And if Suarez goes, it opens... One of the problems earlier in the season was too many, exactly what you just said that Barcelona mustn't do, is having too many players, and so you're chucking people into the situation to give them game time, like the under-12s. Actually, they don't even do that in the under-12s generally, but, you know, they should. So it'll be easier next season if Suarez isn't there, which is an awful thing to say, but we all get old, you know.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, otherwise, no, it does happen.
You'd still be at Man United if you grew old, you know. older, Terry. So.
Yes, definitely.
Right, so Lex Luthor wants to know, was it the right choice? A bit of news here, if you haven't caught up with everything, for Mallorca to fire Luis Garcia and bring in Aguirre back won't guarantee much, considering... Leganés didn't make it with him. So, yeah, there's one of the old guys are back, Aguirre.
Yeah.
Oh, so what do you make? I mean, he's been here, there and everywhere. He's been in La Liga before. He's been manager of Mexico before. He's got plenty of experience. The run of results for Mallorca was... the clock was ticking, wasn't it, on Luis Garcia?
Yeah, and his interviews after the games were getting worse. Where he was almost admitting, I haven't got a clue what I'm doing anymore. And he just kept saying everything was complicated. Yes, it's complicated when you're struggling, you don't win it. You're not picking up any points for about 6 or 7 games. And don't come on here and after a game and make it clear you don't know what to do.
That's
an invitation. He's not the first to do it. And every time I see it, I think, keep the interview short. Just keep it basic. I know we moan that managers don't talk enough. But the more they talk when they're in that hole, the worst they dig the hole for themselves. I mean, sometimes it is an air of resignation. We've had managers in the past where they're after a game and you look at them and you're thinking, you actually want the sack.
You're
so down. You expect your players to be up when you're that down.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember who it was. I think his manager of Huesca was almost in tears after a game, saying, I don't know what to do now. I don't know how we're going to get a win. You're thinking, boom, gone. And he was gone. And this was the case with Luis García Plaza. He tends to do a good job somewhere and then it all falls apart. And there are times where you think, he's a really good coach. And then there are times as it deteriorates, you're thinking, literally, why does he lose control of the situation? Promotion, good first half of the season, deteriorating now, team selections, tactics changes. The team selections are still a bewildering. You've got these players on the bench and those, you continue to show faith in those players. And so I thought it was, after his last interview I heard, I thought he signed his own warrant to be sacked. So it didn't surprise me. And I think Aguirre is a really good choice. I understand people saying Leganés went down with him. Their situation was dire when he took over. And then it got even worse. Remember the situation where Nesri went on transfer deadline day. And then Brathwaite went after the transfer window closed to Barcelona. So they're stripped to their two strikers. And at that stage, they looked likely to pull off a miracle escape. And they were unlucky not to do that in the end. They almost did it. So I think Aguirre is... And I think that it's... asking me last week, who's going to go down? I would have said Mallorca in it, with Levante and Alaves. Now I think that they've got a chance because their players are pretty good. I just think they need the manager to pick the right ones, pick a system and go with it. And I think they've got enough talent, particularly in the attacking department, to start scoring goals again, to start winning matches. We've seen them be much more positive. I think they've got a chance now. A week ago, I said, no, Mallorca going down. Now, back up in the air again. And there'll be other teams down the bottom think, oh, no, you know, a team that was on the slide, changed their manager, and they, you know, there might be something we've got to keep an eye on. The likes of Rayo and Hatafe are further up the league. They might be thinking, oh, no, you know, this might get interesting now. So I think it's a wise choice.
There's a lesson there, isn't there? If you're looking around thinking, I've no idea what the problem is, why things are going wrong, staring around. Yeah. Might be you, mate.
Yeah.
But Kelvin,
we've got Takekubo, Kang in lead. We've got Fernino, doesn't play anymore.
Yeah.
And yet I keep seeing Abdon Prats. And I, off the top of my head, I'm not sure he scored a goal in two seasons in La Liga. Last time they were here, I was thinking, oh, he looks like a lower league player. I hate talking like this about players. He looks like a player that's from the lower leagues they've been loyal to, and he's got going. They get relegated, they go down, they get promotion in. Then they're back again. I'm thinking, is he still there? And he's coming on every week over other players, and you're thinking that's just, you know, a manager that has total faith in a player that probably has shown he's not been quite up to the job. So Aguirre, I'm sure, will sort out the best players they've got. Vedat Marikis will give you an opportunity as well. So it's a wise choice.
Kelvin would like to know, are we both well? Yes, thank you, Kelvin. There are rumours that RB Leipzig could be willing to sell Ilaich Moriba this summer. Do you think Valencia will buy him permanently? After a few decent performances in Valencia's midfield, will Bordalas want him? If not Valencia, then where in La Liga, and he stays in Spain, do you think will suit him best? Yes, so I mean, Valencia don't want to spend any money on anyone, it's the short.
That's the problem. Yeah. Yes, and then after that, you're looking at clubs in La Liga where he would fit in. I don't think Valencia will be able to keep him. I really don't. I don't think he's going to come cheap. I think it'll cost a large sum of money. And it's going to be similar to Brian Hill. They want to keep him, but they're not going to be able to.
Yeah.
So if this is a question of getting two young players, really talented young players, not on the cheap, but on a short-term basis to help them get through this season.
Yeah.
And they've both done that. So if you're Moriba, you're looking at, he's not going to go back to Barcelona. Real Madrid, no. Atletico Madrid, no. I don't know. Would he fit at Atletico with his age? Would Simeone see him as a potential project in the future? Do they need any more midfield players? I don't know. So after that, I'm not sure who else could afford him.
Yeah.
Sevilla? don't think he would. Don't think it's a position that Sevilla are desperately crying out for. But it might be something that Munchie appeals to. Munchie, former Barcelona prodigy, going to play in a different country, come back to Valencia, done reasonably well. I wouldn't say been brilliant, but he's doing a good job for Valencia when he's played. It's going to be interesting to see then further down the league that the clubs are not going to be able to afford him. Tough one.
This is where people end up in England, isn't it? I think, or just go back and play for Leipzig, of course. Or another. I would say if you're Valencia, you try and get him for another year on loan, wouldn't you? You'd say
we'll
give you a few million.
That could be possible. Because that could be possible. And this might be a plan of RB Leipzig. I don't know enough about them. Perhaps he couldn't get a game at the moment, so they've sent him away and they'll get him back and he'll flourish playing for them. But it's better for him to be playing than not. Yeah. So it then might suit everybody another season low at Valencia. It keeps the player playing. His value stays at what it is or goes up, as opposed to, you know, the value going down because he's not getting a game at a club that's already got players in that position. So but he's done okay. I wouldn't say he's done brilliant, but he's done okay and he's still very young. It's a player of potential. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. I wouldn't be surprised to see him stay another season at Valencia on loan.
Couple more questions. Michael would like to know, is Xavi La Liga's manager of the year? That's a good question, isn't it? I think he is, he says. I don't even think Madridistas would lobby for Ancelotti. Cholo has got a lot wrong. I think he's made a comeback lately. The teams of the other top candidates all seem to be fading. What are your thoughts? Good question.
Yeah, I think the Ancelotti run is probably a bit harsh. If Real Madrid win the league and win it by some distance, I think that, you know, there have been mistakes. There should have been a couple of poor results. The teams that they've lost to have been strange. But by and large, if you're 10 points clear, you deserve to win manager of the year. Other than that, there's always that debate, isn't there, about someone who hasn't got the same budgets. It'd be like Formula One, someone who's 10th on the grid every week. Might be doing better than someone who's always on pole position, and because they've got the better car, they've got the bigger budget. So you might have to look at other people. There are other candidates, Kike Sanchez Flores, for instance, but they haven't finished. They're not safe yet.
Yeah.
But there are other managers that are punching above their weight. Arrasate at Osasuna. You know, we've never ever talked about them, about being in a relegation battle. Decent-sized club, good players. He's done a fantastic job. Pellegrini with what he's done this year.
Yeah.
With Betis, keeping them involved in the thick of the action throughout the season and playing outstanding football. So Lopetegui would have been a contender until recently.
It's a good point that Michael makes about fading. Iraola would be another one, wouldn't it? Who, if we'd had this conversation 2 months ago, we might have been saying, oh, don't forget Iraola has done that job with Rio, but you're looking at the table now and you think, oh, this is...
They have to be careful now.
I should have dug out
two competitions.
Yeah,
the obvious manager of the year, and then
the value added,
a merit award.
In fact, I will, and I'll try and find it. The pre-season predictions that we did, compare them to the reality now. But that's quite a good measure, isn't it? Where everyone looked at what they had at the start of the season, thought how they would do. I think Raya were rock bottom at that, if I remember rightly. So anywhere other than rock bottom, it's still a good season. Even if they finish 17th, it's still a decent season, isn't it, for Raya?
Yeah,
for
Raya, totally.
Where they started. Last question is from Joe, which you haven't seen, Terry, but I know the story, so Joe obviously doesn't. How did you both get into covering La Liga? He would like to know.
How did we, or how do you?
No, you.
I was finished playing, went into coaching, and had an opportunity to become coach in Northern Ireland, which was a part-time job. And I needed another role that matched up with the international breaks that we get now. And it was difficult to be selective in terms of working at a certain level that would allow me to have those 2 weeks break to leave a club, go off and coach Northern Ireland, which was something I really wanted to do. If I stayed at a club, coaching in the Premier League, it had to be with the first team. So when the international breaks were on, you could disappear. If I was working with a reserve team or a youth team, I couldn't go and disappear. If I was working with a lower league club, Championship, Division One, Division Two. The international breaks didn't apply to those clubs. I couldn't have gone. So I came up with a creative idea of maybe being a scout and living in a European country. Spain was my first choice because that was a league I've been watching for donkey's years. So therefore, I got in touch with a few ex-teammates of mine. They were managers. Asked if there was any interest in it, and there was. So I initially went to Spain to work for Bolton Wanderers when Sam Allardyce was manager. Then it materialised into working for Manchester City before they had any money, when Stuart Pearce was manager. And I lived there for 4 years, scouting, watching three or four games a week live. And eventually Sky found out and asked me to work as a pundit, which led to 10, 12 years, I think, working for Sky. And then since then, fortunately, been able to cling on to dear life to being a Spanish football, I wouldn't say expert, but pundit.
Yeah, I would say expert.
We do concentrate on what we do to the extent I don't know anything else that goes in the football world. Yeah. It does. It takes over. It's good. It's something that I enjoy doing. Love watching. Yeah. I'm being a knowledgeable on another league, more knowledgeable than I am in the Premier League, for instance.
And you've kept on working with clubs and organisations now to use your expertise as well as sharing it here, which is good because there's not enough money in podcasting to make a living out of it, basically.
When I started doing it, I rely on guys like you and Kevin and Rob Palmer and whoever we worked with, because it's knowing a league and knowing players and being an ex-player is one thing, but then becoming a broadcaster needed, you're thrown in at the deep end. No training, and it's sink or swim. And you hope that, along the way, the producers and directors that we work with help you out to now where you think you're always looking to pick up something, but you know how it works, you know what to do, when to say it, what not to say, when to talk, don't talk too much, all those things that, how to, describe a goal, when to describe a goal, don't jump in too early. You gave me some valuable advice about don't do the replay of the goal before we see the replay, because sometimes it was something you're given that advice, valuable advice, because when the replay comes up, you've already done it. Silly things like that. So being a broadcaster relied on me getting help and advice from all the guys that I've worked with over the years and still do. So it was two different jobs. Being a sort of knowledgeable on Spanish football was one thing, but then getting that across to people and deciding what type of pundit you want to be. That's the other choice as well. Do you want to be the same as everybody else? Do you want to do the stick to the same routine, or do you want to have your own opinions? You don't want to be, I particularly don't want to be harsh on anybody and be, particularly cruel to people and too much criticism. That's one thing you have to look at as well. What type of pundit do you want to be? Do you want to be one that's known as he's hard-hitting? It takes all different. I'm not saying one's right, one's wrong, but
broadcasting
is totally different. Yeah, totally. Broadcasting is a different thing to knowledgeable.
Where you get the authenticity is when you're not trying to force yourself into being something that you're not, and good broadcasters shouldn't ask you to do that. Funnily enough, I was in Sky the other day doing, I wasn't in Moldova, exclusive. And I was talking to a couple of co-commentators and they are actually working at it now. And, there are one or two others in the world of commentary who could do with just some conversations about it, like the kind that we had. No one knows. There are no answers. It's a very subjective business. Some people listen to commentators, they I can't stand that guy, and other people think, yeah, he's good. But there are some things that you can do that are pretty universal that will make you better at stuff. And it's just time and effort. And the weird thing is often people on my side of it, there's sort of three sides of it. There's a production side of it that never go on air. Those people are too deferential to ex-footballers. It is weird. And yet footballers are people who are very, very good at taking feedback, because you know, if you had a bad game at Man United or Spurs or something, 30,000 people telling you you're doing it wrong. And, you know, and then you had a, you know, you had managers shouting at you and swearing at you and all of this. And you come into the broadcast world, people don't say anything. They wouldn't say boo to a goose. Oh, don't say anything to him. You think, he's making an absolute hash of this. Tell him. The chances are he's had worse. Unless you're going to chuck coins at him, then, you know, he's had worse in his football
career. Pronunciations. Yeah. Don't even tell them that. Commentators will be talking about Ajax. Tell him it's Ajax, or tell him it's this player's name and that player's name. It's not how he's pronouncing it. Just a little in the air. Trust me, you'd appreciate it. You'd think, oh my God, what was I thinking? You know, I mean, you should know anyway, but there are some less than obvious ones that you're thinking, why isn't no one telling him that he's pronouncing that player's name completely wrong or that team wrong? They would appreciate it, trust me, rather than continue to make a fool of themselves for 90 minutes and then maybe look at it afterwards and go, of course, what was I doing?
Mine was shorter, Joe. Basically, my training, I was a journalist by training, university degree in politics. So I was a journalist, and then I became a sports reporter. And then I got into commentary. So I was in my late 20s, I think, by the time I started. So I was slightly late starter compared to some of them who always wanted to do that. And I did the Italian World Feed. So I was going out and doing the equivalent of La Liga TV, basically, but in Italy, and also working for broadcasters in England when I could. And then basically Sky offered me, when they started doing more Spanish games, they needed another commentator. So they said, do you want to do the Spanish? And I was like, yes, please. And then the first one I did was Betis Valencia. And that was, I was probably there 6 months before you, I think. I think because, you know, there were suddenly extra games. It was a brilliant time in Spanish football, wasn't it? It was the best in the world. It came into that Pep era that then came into the rivalry, the renewed rivalry, where it got bitter with Real Madrid and all of that. So we were there through all of that, and it was a great time. There was a debate, funnily enough, on Twitter. Someone put out a tweet of Revista, the picture of Revista, for the guys there, and people sort of reminiscing about that. Others saying that Sky towards it, because they didn't do Revista right to the end, which I think was a mistake, wasn't it? I think it was a mistake. But I think it was a terrible mistake by La Liga then to not have Sky. My solution, I think, is quite simple. I would have where you'd have, say, three games a week on Sky, Real Madrid, Barcelona, best of the rest, and have La Liga TV, a Sky platform. I think that's fine. So then our guys, you know, who want to watch every game, and want an hour of it's all there, and it's also the casual football fan who isn't going to pay extra for that because they have no intention of watching, you know, the majority of the games, can sit down and watch Real Madrid if they want to once a week or once a fortnight or once a month, and that's fine. You need both, I would have thought, would be the obvious solution to me, but there you go.
It's funny how you remember your first game. I remember mine was Getafe against Mallorca.
Right,
There was a goal from a near post flick at the corner, and someone thundered in, and Ruben De La Red was involved in the action, and I spotted it immediately on the replay because I'd been watching these players for three or 4 years.
Yeah, well, you came in.
It came as a surprise to the. How did you know that? I was like, oh, yeah, well, that was the difference. And we became specialists, didn't we, in La Liga. And we recognise players without having to look at the shirt numbers and stuff like that pretty quickly. And it does help. When we do these other games, the first 10, 15 minutes are difficult if you're not aware of, you know, who's playing where and which you do all your homework, all your prep, and then suddenly you're desperately looking on the monitor to see what numbers on the shirt or the front of the shirt, the back of the shirt, the shorts, and looking at your notes and, that was so-and-so. For us, it became, and it does become now, easy because we know all the players. We need a shirt number.
We better go, Terry. We've been chatting for a long time. People have got, can't sit around and listen to podcasts all day long. So thank you very much for your continued support, everybody. We'll be back. So nothing back end of this week, I think. So you watched it. Well, it's too late to tell you to listen to it in two parts, isn't it? Anyway. So we'll be back. La Liga's back. We'll be back. fairly straightforward, isn't it? Keep on supporting us. Thank you for your support. It really is much appreciated, and we'll see you soon.